Good morning. I'm Steve Whitmire, and you're listening to the Too Much Scrolling podcast. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 5th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm blah, 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 Chepass and Flower.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, I competed in a game. I was on a game show from the Project Nerd Network called The Last Word.
Steve, what was your life on the line there?
I think my pride was certainly on the line, and spoilers, I lost on candy corn. Candy corn was the right answer.
Candy corn the game or candy corn the actual candy?
The candy. The candy corn candy was the final question. The host Q asked the question, what is the best Halloween candy? And everybody knows the answer to that. The answer to what is the best Halloween candy? Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. That is the only answer. There is no other answer. Close your mouth, Chip. Don't say anything. That is the right answer. And then, as a tiebreaker, he asked, what is the worst Halloween candy? And I replied, of course, candy corn. And Q, being Q, said, no, I love candy corn. You're wrong. So I lost the game.
Oh, my goodness. I would say the worst would be just apples. Just go with apples. But let's go best, even best. You said Reese's.
100%.
As a person who has given out candy for years and years and years, I would say between Skittles and Starburst, something like that. It's non-chocolate, interestingly enough. Interesting. So anyway, I'll disagree with you, Steve.
It's okay
and to I'll be take wrong. Swords for 300.
It's okay to be wrong, Chip.
That's S-words.
Down. Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Boy, you know what, Chip? There are some weeks that I don't put anything in this document because I don't watch anything. This week, I watched a ton of stuff.
You did watch a ton of things. And in fact, I'm very interested in this first movie, Free Guy, which is starring a Deadpool, of course. And Free Guy was at the theater, but this week they decided to stream it. Tell us a little bit about that streaming.
Yes. After the 45-day window that it was open only in theaters, this one has been released for you to buy a copy for $19.99. It was released last Tuesday, so last Wednesday, I watched Free Guy.
So you bought a copy, or you got to, I guess, watch a copy? What, I mean, do you own, could you watch Free Guy again?
I own the right to watch this movie whenever I wish from now on for that $19.99. There was no rental possibility for it yet. What they're doing is they go theatrical first, then, hey, anybody who wants to see it at home, $19.99. Then they'll go down to the $3.99, $4.99 rental. Then it will go to Disney Plus.
Now, so this is very interesting because this was probably the best performing movie of this year. I think it's over 300 million. This is Disney is part of this, but interesting. They may have found
this was the test.
The new test. This is how the movies will be released, you know, for at least the time being. Steve, let's get down to the real question because this movie looks great. Tell me about this movie.
This movie is great, Chip. You would enjoy this movie if you could invest $19.99 in entertainment tonight. You should watch Free Guy. This is so much that persona of Ryan Reynolds being put into uncomfortable situations, watching him squirm, and then finding that action hero inside of him and becoming that action hero that we love from Deadpool and from The Green Arrow, don't tell him, of those characters that Ryan Reynolds can play. This is very much the Lego movie where there's a nice guy who finds out that there's something bigger than himself. This is so much the Truman Show, where there's a nice guy who finds out there's something bigger than himself. This is so Disney. There's so many Disney references in this. It is an entertaining thrill ride from beginning to end. I love it as much as I love the Lego Movie, and that's saying a lot for me.
Well, this certainly does look good. The premise, it seems, is there is a video game where one of the side participants becomes aware, mm-hmm. the artificial intelligence becomes aware,
uh-huh.
and at that point, there's where the premise begins and our story begins.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil any of this because there's so much story to just that sentence that you just said. But yeah, that whole idea of computer games, my students, my children are playing these computer games with these personas, these avatars, all of these people walking around this world. This focuses on one of those non-player characters, one of those characters that is not being controlled by a human outside of the video game. It's just the AI of the game. And yes, the AI becomes self-aware and decides how it's going to live its life. I'm not going to spoil from there because the adventure, the ride of finding out what he's going to do, deciding who he's going to be, is brilliantly written here.
Well, Steve, it looks like Apple TV Plus also has a Daily Show.
Yeah, okay, we can get into the problem with Jon Stewart and the problem with Jon Stewart here. The Daily Show, those of you who were big fans of The Daily Show back in the early 2000s, Jon Stewart was an amazing host of that program, giving us a little insight into the news with a very, very interesting comic twist. Now, 20 years later, Jon Stewart is 20 years older, 20 years wiser, and the new show is not The Daily Show, Chip. Let me just put it that way.
Okay, so what is it?
It's a long-form conversation on one topic. The first topic for the first episode is the topic of war and how war leads to soldiers needing help after war. This is a very heavy topic. This is very important to lots of people, and Jon Stewart certainly treats it with the reverence that it needs and tries to throw in a joke or two about this very strong topic, and it just doesn't mesh up right for me.
Are they talking about the expense and the people expense of war?
Yes.
And the reason, and what I'm mentioning about this is I want to say it was in the 1980s or 1990s where the last of the Civil War descendants passed away. And the purpose of stating that was that war, the cost of war, even after you end, so Afghanistan ended, well, the cost of that will be beyond our lifetime. Mm-hmm. There'll be somebody who marries somebody who's going to get benefits. It may be 100 years from now when it's all said and done, where all those costs are brought in, you know, or 75 or 80 or whatever that number is. So even after a war ends, there's additional costs and additional needs for the soldiers and for their spouses.
And that's where Jon Stewart is taking up this mantle and trying to help these people get the help that they need and going to the higher echelons of the Department of Defense and saying to them, why aren't we helping these people get the help that they need? Here is proof of what happened to them. Here's how they are sick. Why aren't we helping? CNN has called this advocacy journalism. The idea of Jon Stewart is the advocate for these people. He is coming out as the strong voice trying to help these people get the assistance that they need. This is not humorous.
Okay. Well, I mean, but there's a need for this. I've worked with a lot of military veterans and getting their benefits. Mm-hmm. What I can state about it is if you can get to a place where there's a group to help you, they will absolutely, they'll cradle you through it. The challenge is if you go to one of the veterans hospitals and things of that nature, that there are multiple layers to deal with. If you're in the hospital, you're dealing with one social worker. If you're outside the hospital, you're dealing with a different social worker. It's complicated because there's a lot of, when I say paperwork, that's not fair. It's just complicated. It's just what it is. But you find a person who says, "Hi, John, thank you for coming in." They will shepherd you through it. Mm-hmm. But the deal is to get to that person who will shepherd you through this. And I assume that many people get frustrated at the beginning of it because it can be daunting. But once you get in and they're caring for you, it is good care. It just takes effort. And it may be beyond what the average person can do.
Especially the average person who's in the middle of a crisis because of their state of mind. I think that John Stewart really wants everybody to get to that person that they need. And the challenge is you're going into a system where you don't know who the right person is. And when you find that right person, it's wonderful. It's a matter of having the mental fortitude to go through the hard parts of the system to get to the good parts of the system. This is, again, not a comedy show.
Well, I think you just hit it right there, is that I am a person who typically can ask the right questions to get where we need to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe he pointed out, and I haven't seen this show, but not every person has that skill. Not every right. spouse or every brother or sister or friend has the tenacious ability to kind of walk through that situation and recognize that a lot of it is hurry up and wait type stuff. Mm-hmm. I need this information to be able to get you where you need to go. Great. Yeah. This is the information. Great. So now you're going to go over here and you're going to wait as we process this other information. And it could be a 24-hour day to get mm-hmm. to the part. I remember a few years ago, I arrived at a veterans hospital, and I think we got there maybe at 10 in the morning. Now, they were working hard on behalf of the person that I brought in there. And mm-hmm. I mean this, the staff was doing a great job. But I think it was 7 or 8 o'clock that night before we could actually get him to where he needed to be.
Yeah.
And that's just because you got paperwork, they got this and that, you have to wait your turn. And once again, that required a lot of patience to become a patient. I mean, I think that this is, my hope is this may be what it was outlining. It wasn't that it wasn't available. It's just that, boy, that to get to the point where we needed to be was challenging. And even once that happened, we had to go back multiple times to schedule appointments and this, that, to be able to get to, once again, I'm using the bureaucracy, not in a negative sense. They're there to protect the integrity of the system. It's just many ways there also are, it's a barrier. It's a challenge. And if it's beyond what the average person is able to cope with, mm-hmm. they can just give up. And I think a lot of it could be people giving up because it becomes hard.
Yeah.
What is the best type of service? The best type of service where the complicated part is in the back of it, but it's elegant up front and it's simple to understand. No one walks into a McDonald's and says, "Oh, how do I order?" I mean, you've got pictures, you got words, and you got a person there to take your order, or you have a screen there to punch your order in. That is a very sophisticated system that is made very elegant and simple. Not everything in life can be that way. And you can just imagine, not really meaning to, but you can make things very complicated just through checks and balances.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think the theme of this program is the checks and balances are necessary, but how does an individual get what they need? And are the people in charge at the highest levels willing to admit that they're not doing the best job, that they're not getting this, the right services to the right people. This is very heady, high level politics and services, and I didn't love this, but I will tune in again. I will go back to the show next week to see what the next topic is.
Well, this seems very much up my alley, mm-hmm. the things that I would enjoy. So what do you know? Apple there TV Plus has something for us.
Netflix does too. They came out with a South Korean show called Squid Game this week. I don't know if you've heard of it, Chip, but I have heard the term Squid Game every day this week. Somebody has brought this up.
Well, this is the hottest show that's out right now. It is as hot as Tiger King was. God. It's the latest version of a home run that Netflix hit. And you're correct in the sense that this is a South Korean show,
mm-hmm.
that is, you know, it's a reading show, Steve. They've got people's dubbed voices, which is awesome.
So let's stop there. Did you watch the dubbed version of this, or did you watch the subtitled version?
Well, the Korean that they speak is being dubbed by actors, which is so awesome because everybody's got these super voices.
Okay, so you watch the dubbed version.
But there's also, I also turn on the reading part of it, Steve.
The subtitles.
Because why not? Well, it's a reading story. It's a reading story, Steve.
Okay.
But so, this is a comic book in a series. So I think there's 9 episodes of it. Mm-hmm. And it is a comic book because it's farcical in the sense of how they view wealthy people. Wealthy people are cruel. Wealthy people would put together this type of game. Wealthy people like to see people suffer. These are themes that are running through this. But at the same time, so that's the reason why it's a comic book series, because I don't think that that's true in real life. I don't think that people actually set out to see people suffer. That could happen as a byproduct, but there are people that certainly get pleasure from watching people suffer, but I don't think that that's the general consensus for wealthy people.
So the premise of this is there's people who are in need of money. They are in debt and they accept this unbelievable, strange invitation to compete in children's games. And sometimes when they're playing these children's games, some of the players are eliminated. And when they're eliminated, they're really eliminated.
I think this is very much a Twilight Zone episode.
I was thinking more Black Mirror. Have you watched Black Mirror?
I have not, but Twilight Zone is a Twilight Zone character. Okay. If someone has seen Twilight Zone, they'll understand the premise of this.
The modern version of the Twilight Zone, even though there is the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone on CBS, there is this other thing called Black Mirror, and it is those strange situations that normal people find themselves in that really lead to dark consequences. And here in Squid Game, that's what we have. This is a life or death kind of game.
Well, I think this is a commentary. It could be a commentary on the United States, but really Korean or Asian society, where humans become debt-ridden, and their decisions sometimes get pushed to periphery. They become, I don't know, serfs of some level. And there are different people for different reasons who have that happen. Imagine you're a small business owner and things are not going well. Imagine you're a person with an addiction. There's a person who is a gambler there's also a person who is an investment banker that lost a tremendous amount for their clients, just way too much money. And I think that a lot of the characters represent different parts of society. But ultimately, what it is your family suffers if you don't plan ahead. And listen, things happen to families. You know, people get sick, the house burns down, and the car blows up or whatever. It has a series of unfortunate events happen. That certainly could put someone in financial straits. But regardless of what the reason is, the commentary was that people are willing to take extraordinary risks to rid themselves of that situation, mm-hmm. as opposed to some of them just working with a more modest expectation of what their salary can bring. Instead of betting the rent on a gambling situation, mm-hmm. you know, basically trying to work within a budget. Now, for a group of people, that certainly could be demeaning, but I'm not trying to mean it to sound that way. But where this gets started is a person sits down next to a person who is in debt and says, hey, listen, why don't we play a children's game? And the children's game was to watch a piece of paper flip over by hitting it.
Mm-hmm. Basically pogs, like big Korean pogs. Remember pogs?
I don't, but I know what they are. I do know what they are. Well, the premise was when the person sat down next to him that if you won, they would give you an extreme amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that's certainly far more than this game was worth. But if they win, well, they get to slap you. They get mm-hmm. to demean you. They get to make you feel poorly. And these people are sitting there losing over and over and over, watching, you know, just being slapped in a public situation. At the end of it, after they've won once, they pay out the money and then they give them a card and say, if you'd like to continue playing a game like this, mm-hmm. give us a call.
Mm-hmm.
And then the darkness of this game begins. And it is the kind of comic book logic of sort of the darkness of the psyche. And I see why people get sucked into it. I'm going to go ahead and rate this. I'll rate this 75 out of 100.
Wow, that's pretty high on the chip scale. So sure. you enjoyed this exploration into a little bit of South Korean culture too, right? This is very, very foreign in a way. And interestingly, this is patterned after some of those South Korean shows that we've seen on Netflix, but this one never aired in South Korea. This is a Netflix original.
Is it really?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. And once again, the all the characters are Korean.
Mm-hmm.
And their voices are being dubbed by actors. So they're mm-hmm. not speaking Korean. This is, you know, Steve and Chip, you know, taking on one of the characters and dubbing the dialogue.
Because you're watching the dubbed version. They did offer also an original Korean version with English subtitles. So you could listen to the original actors or the Americans dubbing. Yes.
I find what is very refreshing about this presentation is that this is so not Hollywood. Mm-hmm. This is not a Hollywood presentation. And I think that's also one of the hooks of it, is that we get so used to seeing a Disney presentation or a Hollywood presentation. There's a sleekness to it. There is a smugness is not fair, but there are ways of communicating through Hollywood that just you're not getting when you go to a foreign presentation. I think that's another reason why people enjoy this.
And the people of South Korea have been watching it so much that their ISP is suing Netflix for like hundreds of millions of dollars because they're using so much bandwidth. The people of South Korea like this just as much as the people of America.
And the people of North Korea may get to see it one day.
Nah, probably not. Squid Game. I don't know that I can suggest that you watch this. I have watched the first hour. The brutality of the first hour was a little bit stark, and I'm not sure that I'm ready for episode two.
Well, and there's the statement on it. That's the reason why this is a comic book presentation, that this is a very brutal, and violence is certainly part of it. This is mm-hmm. not a children's presentation at all.
Right. Children's games being played in brutal ways. You also watched The Spanish Princess on Stars. What are you watching, Chip?
Steve, I watched season one. I've actually, season two was released on DVD this summer. I think it's going to be streaming at some point. But anyway, this is, I was sitting down. I just caught it. This certainly is of the period. England, where if you want to go back to royalty and everything that's going on in between Spain, France, and England, not quite Game of Thrones with sexuality and brutality, but certainly implied type of situation of that nature. This is based on the true story of this time. I would say this is a wonderful presentation, certainly very capable, enjoyable presentation about a Spanish princess, about the politics of being a king in England, and all the challenges that go along with it. This is loosely based on Catherine of Aragon. I don't know how much truth it is going on with it, but I can say that it does have some history that is supposedly true.
Right. It's good to be the king. Opening this week, there's, hey, remember 007? Remember James Bond, Chip?
Steve, there was a movie that was the third of the James Bond movies of this series, that with Daniel Craig, that was filmed and ready for release, what, about 2 years ago?
Yeah, principal photography ended 30 months ago. Almost 3 years ago, they finished filming No Time to Die. And there was apparently no time to release it until this week when it's finally hitting our theaters.
Well, COVID had a lot to do with that. And, you know, right. We had to get Free Guy out there to figure out how to make some money off these movies. So this will be at the theater if you're willing to brave it.
Are you ready to go see a James Bond movie in the theater, or is it too late for James Bond?
Well, Steve, if I review films, I can go at off times. So I certainly, my last movie I went to the theater, I had a private screening. So I was the only person in there.
Okay, so is this on your schedule for this week? Are you a James Bond diehard? Oh, no, wrong film. No Time to Die.
Well, Daniel Craig is my favorite James Bond. I think that the take on James Bond right now is very good. And I think that the challenges of being this type of Secret Service superhero, Daniel Craig and the writers certainly get really well. That this is a very risky lifestyle. It certainly would challenge your body. It would challenge your mind. Okay. And the question is could you leave this type of situation? Hmm. I don't know. Maybe Jon Stewart can study that later.
Hmm. There is a Jason Sudeikis film called South of Heaven coming out this week. A convicted felon goes home and vows to give his childhood love, who's dying of cancer, the best year of her life. This sounds like typical Jason Sudeikis, beautiful, heartfelt, and maybe a little comedic. What do you think?
So is this a prequel or a post Ted Lasso story?
This is Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso gets out of jail and has an adventure. There's a movie about the Iraq war called Operation Curveball that's being limitedly released to this week.
All right, so this was about the build-up to the invasion of Iraq, and it was originally released as Curveball. Somehow we're getting a limited release of Operation Curveball. As you can imagine, with COVID, a lot of stuff was sort of lost. Mm-hmm. I originally thought this was a documentary. It is not a documentary. But It talks a little bit about how the German government and the German Secret Service were part of the group that was providing intelligence that led to the Iraq war. And this is something we should be aware of. Once again, we went to war. We spent a lot of money. A lot of people's lives were lost. Was this the correct action? And I think reviewing history, at least having some better idea of what the thoughts were going on, may lead you to question that.
Or you can leave all of that history and just watch The Muppets. Because, Chip, I'm excited. The Muppets Haunted Mansion is hitting Disney Plus this week. I will be watching this, not Operation Curveball, just so you know.
All right, so this is on Disney Plus. Yes. This is certainly an all-family affair right here. So if you enjoy a spooktacular Halloween month like October, and you wanted to watch something that was set up for the family, this, and also a promo to go to Disney World, because my goodness, this is based in the Haunted Mansion ride.
Yes, this is a much better promo for the Haunted Mansion ride than the 2003 Eddie Murphy version of this story. This is Gonzo being challenged to spend a night in the Haunted Mansion with all of the fun and spooky, child-happy, friendly ghosts that I'm going to see as soon as I possibly can this week in the Muppets Haunted Mansion.
Well, there you go, Steve.
Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week. Okay, I'm going to cheat just a little bit this week. This is not exactly a book. This is an audio drama. It's called The Neil Gaiman at the End of the Universe. This is written by Arvind Ethan David, and it is the story of a man who awakens deep in space on a spaceship. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, Chip? Didn't we just recently read a book about a guy who woke up on a spaceship and didn't know where he was?
Was David Bowie a part of that, Steve?
Life on Mars. Have you ever watched Life on Mars, Chip? You should watch that. That's a great show. That is not exactly the same storyline, but the Project Hail Mary that we read with Professor Pam, that story is very similar to this one. But this one, the twist is this man happens to be named Neil Gaiman. And this is an audio drama, and the voice of the man in the spaceship is Neil Gaiman. He plays himself.
So is he Neil Gaiman, or is it a person named Neil Gaiman?
Oh, dear. That goes into spoiler territory, my friend. This is a 29-minute wonderful puzzle mystery where he, the man who wakes up in this space station, has to find out if he is truly Neil Gaiman. The computer tells him that he's Neil Gaiman, and we're hearing the voice of Neil Gaiman, so the audience thinks that he's Neil Gaiman, but is he truly Neil Gaiman, or is he just some person named Neil Gaiman? This is a great 29-minute puzzle. I recommend this for families driving in the car. It's an audio adventure where you need to solve the puzzle along with the narrator.
So is the answer 42?
Yes, the answer is 42. You're right. Fine. The title is a play on the restaurant at the end of the universe, so this is very much a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy type story. That's why I enjoyed it so much. And back to that concept of Black Mirror. This is very much a normal person put into a very unusual situation trying to solve the puzzle of it, just like Black Mirror and Squid Game.
So if you are a person who has never heard Neil Gaiman read a story, this is a treat. Because yeah. I can tell you, Neil Gaiman is a great storyteller.
I was listening to this at first thinking that he had written this work, and then I found out that it was not his original work. He was just brought in to do the narration. I assume that Arvind Ethan David had already set up that Neil Gaiman was going to do this voice work for him when he wrote this story. But this is so in the vein of Neil Gaiman's writing that I don't know anybody in our audience who wouldn't like this. This has something for everybody.
Well, this sounds, you know, what Neil Gaiman is very playful, certainly a just a wonderful conversationalist. Mm-hmm. So I think being presented with something that certainly is quality, and he may have desire to help out. So there's the beautiful part about the world today is that, you know, a person like Neil Gaiman says, oh, this seems very interesting. All right, I'll do it with you.
And to add to that, all the proceeds from this go to a group called This Is My Brave, a nonprofit organization that is trying to help break the stigma of mental illness and substance abuse and alcoholism and all of those troubling parts of our society. So there's even more benefit to listening to this one.
through the power of storytelling. So that's interesting. This Is My Brave helps a person who is going through some challenges, maybe through an exploration of storytelling. How interesting.
Oh my goodness. That's the spoilers of this, is that's the answer at the end, is you can be brave. You can get through this extraordinary situation by using your voice and telling stories. And boy, is this well done. That's the Neil Gaiman At the End of the Universe by Arvind Ethan David. You can find it on Amazon. It is an Amazon Audible original. I recommend it highly. Scroll With It brings us to our Scroll With It.
Steve, do we have anything that would possibly make our life, I guess, more known by Amazon?
Oh, boy. Back to Black Mirror for a moment. Amazon had a presentation this week showing off all of their next generation of devices. Amazon Glow, the Ring, Always Home, and Amazon the Dog, which is not called that, by the way. It's called Astro, because of course their robot dog is called Astro.
Well, it's a Jetsons world, Steve.
Sorry, that's Scooby-Doo. That's not Astro. Rastro, or Rutro.
So let's go through these real quickly. What is the Amazon Glow?
The Amazon Glow is a concept that I've been teaching my students for a while now. The idea is having a tiny micro projector that can project a larger screen onto a flat surface. So imagine your tablet, your iPad-sized screen, as a projection on your regular kitchen table. So a child can operate the light and move and manipulate the picture. And we can use this in the presentation for, you know, sharing education. Grandma and grandpa can be somewhere else and they can have this connection with this child where they're looking at a tablet and the child is looking at a light and manipulating the images on there to share some thoughts.
Oh, very nice. So we've seen a little bit of these at the mall, right? Where
yes.
They have the games where, I don't know, it's coming from a projector on the ceiling.
Correct.
And it's on the ground. And basically you can step on it and you move everything around.
Exactly like that. A miniature version of that for your home. And then add to that a video connection to grandma and grandpa so that they can play the game along with the kid. That's the idea of Amazon Glow.
Well, that's interesting. Well, at least Amazon will know what you're playing. Steve, how about a flying webcam?
Yeah, the Ring Always Home is a little helicopter that flies around your home with a little webcam so that it can monitor all the parts of your home all day long and bother your birds.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Is it?
I think that, let's just say that there could be some uses of this that are not... Well, a lot of stuff's going to be recorded, Steve, and Amazon will know all about it.
I don't understand anybody feeling so insecure in their own home that they feel like they need a drone flying around their own home recording things. I don't get that.
You know, people have different desires on how they would like to present themselves to the world. This seems interesting in the sense that if you were a newscaster or something like that, and you didn't have to have your cameraman with you, that seems interesting, doesn't it?
You think that this is for filmmakers more than security? Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't know what the future of this
Steve, I think that this will show up on a lot of adult sites. Let's just say that there'll be a person who has interest in recording themselves.
I guess there is a market for that. Yeah, I guess you're right. What's your feeling on the Amazon dog, Astro, the robot rolling around your house that is an Amazon Alexa?
Yeah, does that really make sense?
No.
Don't think so. I think this is a gimmick. There will be a few people that buy it that will be abandoned shortly.
I think the future of home security and home robots is still in the future. And I think that this is a step toward that. But I don't see anybody that I know wanting to have a robot at foot level, at tripping height, that follows you around to serve your needs that your Alexa or your Google Home or the cell phone in your pocket can do. I don't see the niche for this.
Well, Steve, if Amazon and Walt Disney, especially Disney World, the resorts, didn't have enough information on you, it looks like that Alexa is going to offer them even more.
Yes, the Hey Disney device is coming next year. Amazon and Disney making an Alexa-style voice assistant based in Disney. Okay.
As if they didn't have enough information about you. This seems ripe for heading to Vegas, any place that you'd have too much information being collected on you to be able to provide you... well, as they would sell it, they can provide you what you desire. The real challenge with this is that, you know, where do you have privacy to be able to discuss things? I'm not real optimistic of this. This is so wonderful in one level and such a violation in another. Mm-hmm. I think that the next round of devices, innovation, is going to be some kind of innovation that cancels this stuff out. Like when I'm talking, I can press a button and all of a sudden white noise comes everywhere and instead of recording my voices.
Yeah, there is certainly going to be a market for getting away from this market for sure. And BMW is not going to be a part of it because guess what they're adding to vehicles? Amazon Alexa!
Yeah, they did that back in June. They basically did an upload. And all of a sudden, 1.3 million vehicles worldwide had access to Alexa. Alexa is very good in the sense that it understands you, unlike Siri at times. But the real challenge is between Google and Alexa, it just seems that they have no bounds as far as privacy. They're not even giving lip service that this is private. And there's the real challenge is why would you want something recording you in your car? Imagine having a private client call or some type of private medical information you want to discuss through your phone, and then having it being monitored by an outside third party, which you really don't have the control over, you think you have control over. I think this is, once again, a bad idea.
I don't disagree with you, but at the same time, I don't think that you have the privacy that you think you have already. I think our phones in our pocket are spying on us all day long.
Well, certainly that it could be true and is possibly very true. But I still think that we're going to have to figure out some way of creating what you're really agreeing to. Mm-hmm. I think that Apple's version of whether apps can track you as a beginning stage of that. But we're not seeing any of that moving from Google. I mean, Google certainly is willing to continue to collect information on you. This goes back to what Cory Doctorow was saying. And privacy is one of those issues that's just not being honored or valued enough. And that's too bad because you are that product.
Yeah, the idea of privacy is something that we've been struggling with in this technological age, and very Black Mirror. Black Mirror covered all of these topics, and very Twilight Zone. What we have and the future is sometimes kind of bleak.
Well, Steve, old franchises sometimes get reboots. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in Doctor Who.
All right, so let's not call it a reboot. The next season of Doctor Who after the current season. All right, so here's the long story. The current season of Doctor Who, we have Chris Chibnall as the showrunner. We've got Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor. They are exiting at the end of this season of Doctor Who. Then, in 2023, we're getting a whole new showrunner. A brand new showrunner, Chip. Are you excited about a new showrunner for Doctor Who?
I don't know what a showrunner is. This is a new actor or a new producer, a new writer. What are we talking about, Steve?
The showrunner is the singular boss who does everything. He's the producer. He's the writer. He puts together the whole show. He hires everybody. He is the one singular person who does it all. So we're getting a new one in 2023, Chip.
So there's going to be a new Doctor Who and potentially a new direction.
Mm-hmm. And that new direction is brought to you by Russell T. Davies, the guy who brought Doctor Who back to our screens in 2005. So the new direction is the backwards direction.
The new guy, the old guy. Did he do a good job to reboot it?
I think so. I think Russell T. Davies really made Doctor Who come back in 2005. I really think that it could not have worked without his direction. It was amazing in 2005. We got all of the new ideas of Doctor Who coming back from the wilderness years, and maybe, just maybe, he can do the same thing again in 2023.
Are you excited?
I'm always excited for Doctor Who. I will watch Doctor Who no matter how bad it is. I've watched some bad Doctor Who, my friend.
All right. So media companies continue to merge because let's just say that the costs and viewership certainly changed over time. Steve, mm-hmm. We've got some Chicago news this week.
Yeah, newspapers. Newspapers are changing a lot in the 21st century. Chicago Public Media, our NPR station WBEZ here in Chicago, is pursuing a merger with the Chicago Sun-Times to become a huge nonprofit news organization. The future of newspapers is certainly hazy, if not bleak. The future of needing those investigative reporters is something that we've talked about many times. I hope that this combination of Chicago Public Media, a nonprofit, with a news organization like the Chicago Sun-Times will be a good thing.
Well, I think the Chicago Sun-Times is a shell of what it was. Mm-hmm. But the need for news and how to present that news is where, you know, whatever the latest technology is. So newspapers are going away, and WBEZ certainly has the ability to use their website along with their radio format and streaming format to be able to present those news. We're going to see a lot more of this. In fact, we're going to see big organizations also sharing these type of platforms. So I see this is just a trend that's going to happen across the world.
Another trend that's been happening for over a year now is we get to share fun books together in our book club. Professor Pamela Bedore joins us. She came and joined us for a full year of Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. Now she comes in once a month, and we are getting ready for our Halloween read, and we would love for you to read with us.
Well, Steve, we've been around for, this is our eighth year, and I know that many Octobers we have group reads where all of our listeners can join us as we read something. Our book this year is going to be The Last Werewolf. It's part of The Last Werewolf Trilogy, Book 1, by Glenn Duncan. You can pick it up at your favorite bookstore, or you can find it at Amazon. If you want to listen to it, you're welcome to do so through Audible. And this is, let's just make sure this is a grown-up book. I don't want to say it's an adult book, Steve, because that has other connotation.
This is not a child-friendly sort of exploration of werewolves. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I don't think so, Steve. It's an adult book.
Let me read this. It says, a powerful, sexy new version of the werewolf legend, a riveting and monstrous thriller with a profoundly human heart.
All I'm going to say is that Professor Pamela Bedore sets us up well, Steve.
She said that The Last Werewolf by Glenn Duncan is a good book. She said that we need to read this, so we're reading it. We would love for you to read along with us. We're going to have this conversation on October 26th. So make sure you get your copy of The Last Werewolf by Glenn Duncan and read along with us.
And you can be a sexy lichen.
I lichen that. No? Is that not my new catchphrase? Okay.
Steve, we need to spend more time really reading Twilight, right?
I'm testing it out. I'm testing out that new catchphrase. I'm liking it. No?
No sparkly vampires here, Steve.
All right. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Spotify and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
Ooh, keep your piss and flow.
Blah, 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 blah.
See you in the future.